Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. You can check us on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. There you will find all three of our Twitter handles. You can also find us on iTunes. Be sure to leave us a review and download as many episodes as you want. I'm joined today not only by my usual co-host, Morten Jensen, but also Mark Karantzoulis of the Dennis Podman Podcast. Mark, how's it going?
Good, Brian. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. Where can our listeners find you on Twitter, and where can they find your work?
So they can find me on Twitter at my handle is M. Karantzoulis. I won't spell that out, given my last name is 12 letters long. Maybe we can attach that to the feed later on. But that's generally where people can find me. I guess being a little bit of a curmudgeon with the Chicago Bulls this season, but they can find me there. They can find me on Dennis Podman with Morten, and as well as Chicago Bulls Confidential, where I talk Bulls as well. So that's generally where people can find my stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. And Morten, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Brian. It's really, really cold, but I haven't picked up anything yet, which is unusual because I've been sick for about 17% of the entire show.
Oh gosh.
So I'm glad that this is not the case. This podcast is going to be so weird. This is like having two lovers that you're trying to keep separate, and then they meet and it's awkward and you have to lie to get through it.
I think that's the plot of like every bad Lifetime movie. So I'm glad to live that out today. Our usual other co-host, Sarah Chalea, could not join us today, but she will be back soon enough. So since we've got two Bulls guys here, we're going to start with the Chicago Bulls this week. You know, last time we recorded, I think it was right before the Bulls-Knicks game. So the Bulls looked really good for a while. And we all said last time that, you know, if we could redo our playoff picks, they would be a surefire playoff team. Then they go and drop three straight games starting with that Knicks game. But they bounce back and have won two of their last three against Orlando and Miami. They lost in the middle there to Atlanta. So, guys, what more have we learned about the Bulls in the past week or week and a half?
I'll let Mark take this one because, Brian, you have a tendency to just set me off.
Yes, Mark, be my guest. Tell us what you've seen from the Bulls lately.
Well, I would imagine what I'm going to say is probably what Morten would have said anyway, because we have a pretty similar view on the Bulls. And, you know, if you listen to Dennis Podman, we don't really disagree with each other. We often find each other in agreement with a lot of things, which may not be for the best in terms of listenership. But I think what we've seen since their 3-0 start is obviously they went 0-3 thereafter. They went on a bit of a losing streak, and they've sort of steadied the ship now with a couple wins and looking more like the playoff team that we thought they potentially could be. So they're 5-4 now. But I think what we have learnt is that they're still going to be an inconsistent team. So that for the last two seasons, you know, Thibodeau's last season and Hoiberg's first, they were a very inconsistent team. They would go through patches where they would win games, go through patches where they'd lose. And the basis for that would be their effort defensively. So when they have been on defensively, they've been a really hard team to beat. But then when they're not engaged defensively, when they're not trying on that end, then they can, you know, the opposition can really put points on them. So I think that's what we've seen in their losing streak. Whenever they allow teams to score 30 points in the first quarter, you can pretty much assume the Bulls are not engaged defensively and it's going to be a long night. And that's pretty much what's happened in every loss they've had thus far. The Hawks game, which is their last loss, the Hawks put up 35 points on them in the first quarter, and of course the Bulls lost that game, giving up 115. So, same inconsistent Bulls, same poor defensive effort, and ultimately that leads to their record hovering around 500, which is pretty much where I thought it would be towards the end of the season.
There you go. So you had a feeling this was coming.
I had a feeling it was coming. Look, my ultimate prediction for the Bulls, just to let your listeners know, was my prediction was, you know, they'd hover around 500, they'd win 42 games and potentially squeeze into the playoffs out east, pretty much like they did last season. Even though they've got a remodeled roster, So I was expecting more of the same, but I guess my tone has been somewhat negative. So yeah, I what they're doing now and what I've seen hasn't been a complete surprise, but yeah, I would expect more of the same, essentially.
Gotcha. So we talked on this podcast last time about Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott being pleasant surprises for the Bulls. I feel like we also should have mentioned Cristiano Felicio because, you know, he's just like sneaky good coming off the bench. Morton, I'm going to let you go off if you need to about Rajon Rondo. Tell me how you feel about the Rondo era this week.
So he actually had a decent game in Miami.
Yes.
But that's about it. He's really been horrible. Against the Knicks, Mark, you can correct me if I'm misremembering, but I think he was one of nine, primarily on wide open jump shots. And it's it's just such a problem. Like when the defense sacks off and he launches those shots and they clank and he starts chasing offensive rebounds like he knows that they're off and then he gets out of position because of it. It's just everything is so horrible. And his defense, like this was a guy who was once viewed as a defensive player of the year candidate year in and year out. And now he's like gambling. He's losing his man. He's continuously miscommunicating with Doug McDermott on switches, for example, something I've noticed. He's bad, man. And not Batman, but bad, man. Really, really bad. It seems like when he was brought in to sort of keep the team together. Like he was supposed to give shots to Dwayne and Jimmy and kind of keep the whole thing on a string. And it seems like those guys have had to compensate more and more for his presence, and that's obviously a major issue. It makes me wonder how good Jimmy would be with a proper point guard right now, because Jimmy offensively is beasting, but I think he would be even better if he had a guy who could stretch the court at the one position, who could help offset like the lack of shooting from Wade, because I know Wade has been somewhat decent shooting wise, but like 9 out of his 12 total threes for the year has come in 2 games. So it's not like he's a complete threat out there, like a persistent threat out there. So yeah, I would personally prefer to have Isaiah Cannon start. And I know Brian, former Sixer.
Wow.
I know you're not too impressed with him, but that's where we are right now. Like with Rondo, he's a third stringer. He's a third stringer.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to let Wade kind of be, I want to say like a full-time point guard, because I feel like Jimmy can also do a little bit of ball handling, but you could kind of split the duties between Wade, Butler, and Kanan, and that would help address those spacing concerns that we talked about, you know, repeatedly coming into the season in the first week, because really that's Kanan's, that's what he does. He's not really a point guard, but he is a great catch and shoot threat. So if you've got him out there, you know, at least it adds a little bit of extra firepower to that starting lineup. And then the problem is the same thing you guys ran into with Powell last year, is that I don't necessarily see Rajon Rondo taking kindly to coming off of the bench. I think that's going to be a time where ego gets in the way and complicates what could be best for the team, unfortunately. We'll talk about this in a little while, but I just have not been able to watch that much basketball this week due to everything else going on since Tuesday. So really, the only way I've caught up on what's going on with most teams is through my fantasy teams, and I've noticed that Rajon Rondo has been very disappointing so far. So, you know, for your sake, for real life, and for my sake, for my sad fantasy team that has him as their starting point guard, I hope he turns it around. Is there anything else you guys want to touch on with the Bulls here?
We probably shouldn't. Just because I'll probably go on a Rondo tirade myself. So I don't know. Unless you've got something else, Morton, I won't continue to harp on the Bulls just because I will continue to harp on them.
Well, this is not really harping per se. I think I want to give them a little bit of credit. Like Doug has looked better. I don't think, and I know Mark is in agreement with this, and so are loads of Bulls fans. Doug has not been set up properly for a long time. Like, he should, they should actually target him to go outside a little bit more. He doesn't get a whole bunch of threes for him. So I think he's, prior to the Miami game, he had hit 1 3 in 5 games, mm-hmm. and he had taken like 1.2 or something, like way less than he should. He should be out there taking like 50 or 55% of his shots from outside, and the Bulls should use his newfound aggressiveness to actually do something about it. Mm-hmm. And to Fred's credit, Doug did come out shooting a little bit in Miami. I think he knocked down 2 threes or something like that, but he needs to get outside a little bit more. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can become, like, because there is a level of talent and a level of potential there that I think is being a little bit explored right now, and I'm glad that it is, that he wasn't just stuck to the bench. So I'm kudos to the Bulls for making him aggressive, and then, dear Bulls, just use that aggressiveness a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, we mentioned him last week as the kind of the big surprise along with Taj, and I think from everything I've seen, he was out for a game or two with the concussion, but since he came back, he's been still really good. So that's the Bulls have a fun young group of players. They just have this like weird transition year with Rondo and Wade, but I don't think the team is necessarily, it's not devoid of talent for the future. So I think you guys have some reason for some long-term optimism. We're going to now turn to two teams that have very little reason for short-term optimism. The Sixers and the Pelicans, both of whom did get their first win in the past couple days. The Sixers beat the Pacers in overtime on Friday night. We didn't touch on this in our last episode, but they traded Jeremy Grant to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Ersan Ilyasova. I follow a bunch of Sixers people on Twitter, obviously, and there was a weird amount of backlash to the trade originally, and I think it's mostly because Jeremy was like one of the process guys. He was a second round pick. He played a lot of minutes. Much like most of the players in the Sam Hinkie era, his swing skill was shooting, and he never quite developed that. But he's a great shot blocker. He's really athletic. He's fun on defense. So he's just like a fun guy to watch if you remove the he can't shoot aspect of his game. Ilyasova has come in and hit the ground running. Like, he's really providing nice scoring pop off the bench. Especially with Dario kind of being inconsistent there. So I think there are brighter days ahead for the Sixers from what we can see. Morton, I know you and I, we both picked Buddy Hield for our Rookie of the Year, which we that just goes in the trash right now. If Embiid stays healthy, it's him by a landslide. Yeah. And he's, frankly, one of the only things that has made me smile this week. On election night, he said America was tanking, and then tweeted, trust the process. So he is once again a national treasure. I do want to talk about the Pelicans, though, because Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical reported that Drew Holiday is coming back within the next week. It's not clear exactly when he's coming back. They said the worst case scenario is next Friday, which means, his wife underwent brain surgery last month. He took some time off to be with her and their newborn child. Obviously, it's great news that he's coming back soon, just for the health of his family. You would assume he would not be coming back if things were not going great. So happy that the Holidays are doing well. But, guys, the Pelicans have been, frankly, one of the biggest disappointments both last year and this year so far. Mort, do you think Drew can help them turn the season around a little bit?
Obviously, yeah. I mean, he's a good defender. He can shoot. He's big, strong, get to the cup. And he's probably a better playmaker and overall team leader than Tim Frazier. Although I will say, he's actually done a pretty decent job from the point this year, despite their 1-8 record. 12 points, 8 assists, 4 rebounds, 41% from downtown. I mean, these aren't bad numbers. It's just Drew is better. Mm-hmm. And not just statistically speaking, his impact is just wider and broader and deeper. I kind of enjoy the fact that we're going to talk about New Orleans a little bit because they have each one more, and both of you are extremely high on each one. And
Yes.
coincidentally, just to tie him together with the Bulls that we talked about before, he would have been the perfect guy to actually retain on the current Bulls instead of, for example, oh, who should we pick? Rajon Rondo. But no, Holiday obviously would be a tremendous boost for this team. Whether or not that's going to show itself properly in the win-loss column, that remains to be seen, though, because it just seems like there is something fundamentally wrong with this Pelicans team. It seems like they're just not on the same page. Whether Holiday can put them on the same page or not, I don't know, honestly, because he's been pretty injured
Yeah.
for his whole tenure in New Orleans, so he has to like also pick up the chemistry, and he has to understand the schemes. And I mean, there are so many open questions with that team, isn't there?
Yeah, there really are. And we should mention the timetable is not certain, but Tyreke Evans recently Snapchatted. I guess that's the verb of how to Snapchat. He posted a picture on Snapchat, showing him working out and saying he's hoping to be back by late November, but mid-December is the absolute latest. So reinforcements are coming for this Pelicans team, but I'm just looking at their schedule here. Their next, we'll assume Holiday is back no later than next Friday, which is a game against the Trailblazers. They have the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Magic before that. But then afterward, they have Charlotte, Atlanta, Minnesota, Portland, Dallas, and the Lakers again. So they really need to right the ship pretty quickly, or they're gonna. They might. Same thing happened last year. They just fell into too deep of a hole, and then they kept trying to dig their way out and like almost got to 500, but then they just couldn't quite get over that hill. So, if I'm a Pelicans fan, I'm certainly hoping. Holiday is back sooner than later. I'm hoping he stays healthy. We haven't heard anything in terms of his stress reactions. He said over the off season he was totally healthy. It was like his first healthy off season, so he felt great. So we could just only hope. It sucks. Like Anthony Davis is off to such a historic start to the season, and it's brutal that this Pelicans team. They're just so injury ravaged already, or I guess, Drew isn't an injury, but they're missing so many of their top guys that it sucks for Brow that, he once again might miss a spot in the All-Star game or an All-NBA spot because his team just doesn't have the firepower to compete. So fingers crossed the Pelicans can get it together and, we can start again appreciating Anthony Davis for what he is, which is one of the best players in the NBA.
Come on home, Anthony. Come on home.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure both of you guys would like that. So, Mark, I want to ask you about this next topic because Mort and I have both railed against this team pretty much for the last season. The Orlando Magic on Friday, they moved Aaron Gordon to the bench and started Jeff Green in his place. That did not work out well for them. They lost, I believe it was 87-74 against Utah. So, Mark, first, should Rob Hennigan, their general manager, be on the chopping block? And second, what would you do to fix this Magic team?
Well, it's funny that you asked me this question because I was actually kind of high on the Magic entering this season, and every time they lose, like I feel like I'm just getting a little bit more dumber, if that makes sense. Like, how did I get this so wrong? But like, I expected them to be, if nothing else, a top 5, top 10 defense, and right now they're like 25th or 26th in defensive rating and a 29th in offensive rating. So the Magic, even though they've won 3 games, they're arguably one of the worst teams in basketball at the moment, and I don't understand this move of putting Gordon to the bench. He may not necessarily be your best player now, but if he's not, he's not far off it. But he's definitely the guy who has to bring that franchise forward. So I don't understand why you would bench him. If you're going to bench someone, I would assume it would have to be a guy like Ibaka.
Yeah.
Now, we sort of talked about it with Rondo before, whether there'd be any chemistry issues benching a veteran like Barker, who is coming into a contract year and is definitely looking for that big deal. Maybe that would, really cause some locker room issues. So maybe that's why they haven't elected to do that. And I guess maybe they're trying to save face as well, given they traded Oladipo, a former second overall pick, for Ibaka. Maybe they just can't move him to the bench straight away. But it is a perplexing move, given how good Gordon was looking last year when he was playing power forward. And now that they've moved him to small forward and now moving him to the bench so Jeff Green can start. It's just a weird situation. But
yeah,
I don't know if Rob Hennigan should be on the block. I keep hearing that, you know, from various sources, whether it be other podcasts or other pieces of writing, that Rob Hennigan should be on the block. But I guess one of the things that I always question when, we talk about GMs and their job security is how much of the decisions they actually, or the decisions they pull the trigger on, how much is that them or how much is that the owner?
Yeah.
So I guess with the Orlando Magic, my guess is that a lot of it's being driven by their ownership, that they want to get back into the playoffs. And a lot of these rash moves that Hennigan has made, I wonder how much he would actually be, you know, on board with these decisions, or is it something that he's being influenced or being told by management to do? So I kind of feel bad for him. And again, this is just my interpretation. I could be completely wrong, but to me, it looks like it's something that it's more of an organization thing, or an organization push by the Magic ownership, saying we want established players, let's move some of our younger guys out, let's try to be a playoff team. And they've put together a roster that I guess doesn't really make sense, and how they get their way through it, I don't know. I think the only way is that they have to trade one of those big guys, whether it's Vucevic or Biombo or Barker. That way they can allow Aaron Gordon to go to the power forward position and build through that guy, because he is their future. That would be the logical sense to me. But logical hasn't been a thing that has been happening too often in Orlando. It's crazy.
It sure hasn't. You're speaking my language right now, man. You're on board with the... I mean, that's how I felt about Sam Hinkie. You know, a lot of, I feel like, his later decisions were driven by ownership rather than, you know, his own personal choice. And I'm going to my dying day, I will believe that he wanted to draft Kristaps Porzingis, and ownership overruled him and made him draft Okafor. But you definitely bring up some good points. It would be crazy to think that he would keep his job if ownership, like if he was the impetus behind that Tobias Harris salary dump. Right. That's especially seeing what Harris has turned into already in Detroit, and seeing how badly they misused that cap space that they freed up to in that trade. So, yeah, I mean, you have to assume that ownership keeps trying to push them into being a playoff team. And it's just like this collection of misfit toys at this point. Like, I think you're totally right in that they have to trade one of the bigs. Presumably, you know, the second they signed Biombo, that seemed to send a signal they were trying to trade Vucevic, but I guess they haven't found a taker or haven't felt the need to actually do so yet. So they're definitely a team to watch in the coming weeks and months, because if they don't turn it around, you know, as you mentioned, Ibaka is a free agent at the end of the year. Is he going to really re-sign with a team that completely tanks? Probably not. So I don't know that they can blow up their roster necessarily, but it does feel like they've got to make some big move to right the ship. Morton, do you feel validated that we're not the only two who hate everything the Magic have done in the last year?
Yes. No, honestly, I don't think I've seen anyone be particularly optimistic about Orlando after the Jeff Green signing.
Yeah.
Because that's when people started asking, what the hell, right?
Right.
I mean, this doesn't even make a lick of sense. Forget about the $15 million for 1 year. It's not about the money. It's about the fact that when you get a guy in like him, he's expecting to play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not some sort of end-of-the-bench type of guy, though he probably should be, but perception is everything. And so, you know, you just knew, okay, even if they put him, Aaron Gordon, that is, at the three, he wouldn't play because he would have a competition there.
Right.
Well, okay, they also signed Bismack Biyombo and traded for Serge Ibaka, didn't trade Vucevic, so you just knew, okay, well, you weren't going to get, you know, minutes up front as well. So where the hell does that leave the most important asset in the entire organization? Because, hey, you know what? You're short on assets now. You traded two of them for Ibaka.
Right.
Like, the whole thing just reeks of incompetence, and you would think that it was Gar Forman leading the charge with this team.
Yeah. You know, I think the reason people, aside from the contract, you don't like the Jeff Green signing, because as you said, like, it just creates the opportunity for something like what happened on Friday night to move Aaron Gordon to the bench, which should not be happening. Right. Like, you only have him on a rookie deal for two more years. You need to figure out where he's best, and it sounds like we all agree he is best suited to play the power forward long term. So you already kind of screwed the pooch by trading for Ibaka. But then, like, why are you moving him to the bench? If the season's already not looking great for you, so you should maybe start focusing on player development. Like, Mario Hezonja, I think he was a DNP, which is crazy. Like, this guy was the number five pick 2 years ago. You cannot be benching your young, 21-year-old players. Yeah, like, why? What are you doing to win a game in a season where, you know, it's early? They're not out of the playoff race by any means, but they're not looking good. So, yeah, prayers up to Magic fans. Good luck getting through this season.
So one final note on the Magic, right? Mark had a pretty good point about the whole Rob Hennigan affair. Like, it could come from higher up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is another example that actually cements that being the case. And that's last year with Scott Skiles. Scott Skiles went to management and said, you know, Elfrid Payton, no, he's not the guy. Right. He's not the guy we should play. He's not the future point guard. We need someone better. Or I don't know if he said better, but someone else. And nope, they stuck to their guns with him, even though he's like a complete Rajon Rondo clone in many capacities. And it makes zero sense. And it does seem like for some reason there is an ownership angle here that has a sort of vision, I suppose, and are looking to do something now. And have decided that this is the guy that's running the point from. It seems like they have a 2008 Boston mentality, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like trade their youngins for veterans, and then let the young guy handle the point guard role. It really does seem that way. And in that case, Rob Hennigan and the Orlando Magic. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, Aaron Gordon. We have some veterans on the Bulls, like, and Aaron Gordon looks awfully attractive to us. So, I mean, I'm sure we can swing a deal. Just, you know, putting it out there, right?
Yeah. I think...
Here's my final point on Hennigan. Now, and I can't overlook this. He's a product of the Spurs. He's a product of the Thunder. Two extremely good organizations that. Fantastic at drafting, collecting assets, and putting together a team via the draft. Hennigan was on that path. He put together a really, maybe an odd collection of younger guys that necessarily didn't fit. Maybe one or two of them had to go regardless, but he put together a nice team of high upside talented guys. And a few of them still remain, but the moves that we're sort of seeing the last couple of seasons, or at least this season, You've both touched on them. You've got the Scott Skiles hiring and the Scott Skiles, you know, I guess, eventually leaving. But Hennigan stole Tobias Harris from Milwaukee. He's not going to just dump him to the Detroit Pistons without someone else being influenced. And Scott Skiles coming into the organization, who obviously had connections with ownership. Again, that doesn't sound like a Hennigan hire to me. So I feel bad for the guy. I don't think this is his doing. If you look at his resume of where he's been and what he had sort of accomplished in Orlando in over his first 2 to 3 seasons to what we're seeing now, I don't think it's his doing. I think he may be the scapegoat, but I think that would be unfortunate. And the thing with the Magic is they're probably only one trade away from actually unlocking a fun team.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to remove one of their big guys, then you can sort of start playing lineups where you've got more Ibaka at center. You can play Gordon, at power forward. I don't mind the Jeff Green deal. It's a 1 year, $15 million deal, but they need someone to score the ball. So if you have Gordon and Barker up front, you can put Jeff Green at small forward, and you can switch a lot of things with Gordon and Jeff Green at 3 and 4, and you've got Fournier at the shooting guard, and then suddenly you've got some shooting on the floor, and you're not necessarily concerned too much about Alfred Payton. So I think they have some upside of unlocking a really fun team that can be a fun athletic defensive team, but they've just got to work out that first trade. And until they do that, I don't see how they're going to turn their season around.
Yeah, definitely. So let's now turn to the Clippers, who are 8-1, I believe. Is that right? Yes, 8-1. So I wanted to, get some insight from Sarah here, because the Clippers, they lost to the OKC Thunder last week, I want to say, and then immediately proceeded to blow the doors off of the Spurs, the Pistons, and the Blazers, all three of which are very good teams. So Sarah could not make it today again, but she did email us some thoughts about the Spurs Clippers game, which I'm going to read quickly here. She said it was no contest. Both teams were on the second night of a back-to-back. The Clippers just executed the Spurs into the ground. She called them a well-oiled machine, which the Spurs are not. And Blake detonated as usual. CP3 played with his usual surgeon-like precision, and silly Spurs turnovers quickly turned into points. Lather, rinse, repeat. Kawhi and Patty were both off scoring-wise as well, so the Spurs just didn't have a prayer there. So, Clippers, 8-1. Their only loss is a very close one to OKC. Are they the best team in basketball right now?
Well, they're outscoring, teams by over 15 on average for the year. That's
Well, they're the
pretty
best defensive
dominating.
team, best
Yeah,
defensive team in the NBA.
I mean, look, this is the Clippers. We're not supposed to ask that question, right? But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't oppose it. It seems like they're hitting on all cylinders. They have, I mean, I was pretty surprised when I looked at their minutes. Like, Blake is leading them at 31.9. The fact that they now have something resembling a bench, just a little bit more, that helps matters. Even though I'm not crazy about Wesley Johnson, but and Maurice Bates have not been hot. But he just offers something, and it allows people to take a breath. And for the Clippers, who are getting a little bit up there, that might just prove exactly what's needed, at least in the regular season. Who's to say if they can get by San Antonio or Golden State in the playoffs? But right now, regular season-wise, they look damn good. Best team in the league right now in terms of regular season? Sure, I'll buy it.
Mark, are you on board with that as well?
I want to be on board with that, and the reason I want to be on board with that is because Chris Paul is my favorite player in the NBA, and I just want him to remove any tag of being this choker, this non-winner. I just want that perception of him to just be erased as quickly as possible. So I want to believe that the Clippers are going to go deep into the playoffs and, potentially even to the finals. So I would love to see that, but again, it's 9 games in, so it is a small sample. And given what the Clippers do come playoff time, whether it be injury or just crunch time mistakes, they generally find a way to implode. So whilst they're humming at the moment, I still question whether that will be the case, towards the end of the season. I would hope that that's the case because they're really rolling at the moment. But they were really good defensively last year. The defense is carried over this year. The offense is always going to be good. It hasn't been great thus far this year, but I think obviously, we all expect it to pick up based on what they've done, historically, and started to pick up over the last few games. But I think we're going to still be asking the same question about the Clippers, and it's not necessarily the question of whether the team will be blown up at the end of the season, but more so, who is their small forward in crunch time minutes in a playoffs. So, I was watching the OKC game last night versus the Clippers, and they came away with a win, but they had Jamal Crawford essentially playing a small forward. Now, you can't do that against the Warriors or even the Spurs or Cleveland should they make it to the finals, because you've got LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Kevin Durant to go against, and there's no chance that JJ Redick can stop them. And of course, if JJ can't do it, then Jamal Crawford has no chance in hell. So, you know, I think they still need that small forward option. I would love to see them get their hands on Wilson Chandler or someone similar.
Ooh,
that can
fun.
Play a role and spot up in the offense and hit a three and potentially even play some small ball four as well. But that would be cool to see. But I think that will be the question for the Clippers come the end of the season, is who is that fifth guy? Just as it's pretty much the same question we've had with them for quite some time now. But I mean, right now they're humming, and they are probably the best team in the NBA at the moment, which is definitely a positive.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it just speaks to the value of continuity. You know, there's been talk about like blowing up this big three for quite some time, and the fact that they didn't bow to that pressure and they said, no, we have a good core. You know, we have a 50-55 win core. We just need to gel, and we need Blake not to break his hand punching someone. I mean, yeah, I think, you know, if they're not the best team, they're right up there. I think you could make an argument for Cleveland. Golden State, you know, we talked about them last time. Their talent is kind of overwhelming right now. They still have some issues to work out, which is expected given how much roster turnover they had this offseason. I mean, I still, if I had to pick today, I would still pick the Warriors to win the title just because of that talent. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think the Clippers, you know, I think all three of us, Mort and Sarah and I, before the season started, we had the Clippers as number two in the West ahead of the Spurs. And there's nothing that I've seen in these past 2.5, almost 3 weeks, to make me think otherwise. So, good job, Clippers. Keep it up, and don't screw up in the playoffs. So, we are going to turn now to our Where Amazing Happens segment. And I think, you know, we have to start with the big news of the week, not just in the NBA, but in the U.S. and the world, frankly.
Yeah, I did get a haircut, Brian.
that was plastered on CNN this morning. Good, yes. So the Americans elected Donald Trump to be their 45th president. A number of NBA coaches have voiced their opinion about the election since it happened. And I want to read the quotes from Stan Van Gundy, Steve Kerr, and Greg Popovich, because I think, you know, they frankly, their sentiments are very interesting. And, you know, I've got a Danish guy and an Australian guy on this podcast, so I think this is going to be a very unique perspective hearing what you two have to say. But we'll start with Stan Van Gundy. He said, "I don't think anybody can deny this guy is openly and brazenly racist and misogynistic. We have just thrown a good part of our population under the bus, and I have problems with thinking this is where we are as a country." Steve Kerr said, "It's tough when you want there to be some respect and dignity, and there hasn't been any. Then you walk into a room with your daughter and your wife, who've basically been insulted by his comments, and they're distraught. Then you walk in and you see the faces of your players, most of whom have been insulted directly as a result of being minorities." Popovich, on Friday, said, "Right now he's just trying to formulate thoughts. It's too early. I'm just sick to my stomach. Not basically because the Republicans won or anything, but the disgusting tenor and tone and all of the comments that have been xenophobic, homophobic, racist, misogynistic. I live in that country where half of the people ignored all of that to elect someone." So before we get into this, I mean, we're not going to talk about Republican or Democrat. This is not about that. I want to just shout out the NBA for giving players and coaches the freedom to talk about these things. You know, if you compare this to the NFL, very few people have spoken out publicly about not necessarily who they were supporting in the election, but, you know, since Tuesday, there have been a terrifying number of hate crimes that have been committed in this country, many of which are people who are using Donald Trump's name when they're doing these things. So the fact that the NBA has been so vocal in their opposition, not necessarily to Donald Trump, who I think anyone in this country can agree, we're all hopeful that he surprises us all and turns out to be a better president than expected. But, you know, so far, he has not spoken out about the people doing these actions in his name, which is disgusting. And no Republican leadership has either. So I think that's what's rubbing all of us wrong, and including the NBA. You know, they're a predominantly black league, and the people committing these atrocities want nothing but harm to those, to the, and the majority of the NBA. So, guys, I want to hear what you have to say. I mean, what's been the reaction to what happened in the last couple of days in Denmark and Australia?
So here in Australia, I think everyone is completely perplexed by the whole thing. Like, we just don't understand how something like that could possibly have happened. I mean, to give you an idea of what that means, one of our newspapers here, a Sydney newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, the day after Trump was elected, I guess the front page was a picture of Trump, and WTF was the headline. So I guess that sums up the sentiment here in Australia. And again, just another anecdote. I was sort of explaining to Maud, but at my place of work, there is a TV in the kitchen area. And the US election was during our day, so we were sort of finding out that Donald Trump would be the president-elect probably midday our time, maybe a little bit later, or at least when it was starting to look like he had the upper hand and was, you know, was in the box seat to becoming the president.
Yeah.
So that was around that time, and I was just standing there watching it, and a guy came up to me at work and just said, you know, I won't say exactly what he said because there's a few expletives in there, but his comment was essentially, how can America not see, like the rest of the world, that Donald Trump is, you know, insert several expletives. So yeah. I guess from here, from our point of view, from an Australia point of view, and not that I can talk for the entire country, but at least for the people that I converse with and the people at work, my friends or whoever it may be, that we just don't understand how a country like America can, one, have a guy like Trump running in the start, in the first place, but then to allow him to run and then have half the country say, this is the guy that we want to be the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah.
It just literally makes no sense to an outsider at all. It's completely perplexing. And obviously there's a good chunk of America that feel the same as well, given the protests that have been going on. Obviously not everyone's happy about the decision, but from at least my perspective, it's completely baffling. It feels like we're in one of his reality shows.
Yeah, I know. This is I wish this one got canceled. I mean, you know, he definitely tapped into anger and people thinking that the government was ignoring them. And I don't want to equate and say all Trump supporters are racist, because I don't believe that. I do believe that a grand majority of racists are Trump supporters. I'd be very floored if it was 50-50 between Trump and Hillary, just based on, you know, again, the number of hate crimes. I want to shout out Sean King on Twitter, works in New York Daily News, and he's just been compiling kind of all the incidents that he's hearing from. You know, people are sending him like things from like middle schools and high schools and colleges. Like they're just atrocious. So again, you know, it's not even about the politics at this point. Like I am not even thinking about January 20th when he gets inaugurated. And I think that's what stood out to me, at least from the quotes from Stan Van Gundy and Steve Kerr and Pop. They're not thinking about him as the president. They're hopeful. And, you know, Ernie Johnson was saying the same way. And Charles Barkley said the same thing. Like everyone wants him to succeed because we don't have another choice at this point. But we also don't want civil liberties to be trampled upon, because you know we fought for too long and too hard to advance forward, and now just the wave of anger that has swept over in the last couple of days is really—it's scary. So, Mort, are you guys are equally perplexed in Denmark? I'm guessing.
Yes. so. It's the other way around for me in terms of I woke up to the news. Yeah. I wasn't awake when it happened, unlike Mark. So that day, and that's just pure coincidence, I actually had to spend the entire day at the largest TV channel in Denmark. So, you know, you had editorial and online news coverage and everything. So I was like smack down in the middle of a bunch of reporters and journalists reacting to the election. And man, I mean, going throughout the course of that day inside that large building and listening to people react to it, it was the same kind of disbelief. And again, it wasn't necessarily about Trump. The vast majority of the debate that I heard was, I can't believe how many people decided to use the logic, well, I just don't want to vote for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm voting for the worst candidate. Like, it's because their entire logic is built on the fact that Hillary is not the right candidate for them. They consider her a bad candidate. And I don't disagree with that. I thought she was horrific. I don't like her at all. I would understand that perspective. But if you don't want to support a bad candidate, why would you then throw your support to someone who's worse? That was really what complexed us the most, because so a lot of these reporters have been in the States compiling bunch of interviews, like a lot, both on video, some on text and whatever. And it was like the vast majority of responses from Americans was, you know, from those who voted Trump was, well, it's because it's not Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
That's the perplexing part. And then when you add to it that 46.9% of voting eligible Americans didn't vote, it seems weird. And I know we're probably going to lose a hell of a lot of listeners just going all political, but I don't care. And the reason I don't care is for something else. Because remember for how many years people complained that Michael Jordan did not use his position to speak out on issues. God damn it, Michael Jordan, speak out on issues with your profile. Now players and coaches speak out, and people are like, stick to goddamn sports, stick to it. Like, make up your mind, people. What the hell? Yeah. I mean, come on, you can't have it both ways. That's just idiotic. Look, I love the fact that the NBA allows for these sorts of think tanks between coaches and players. This isn't, like you mentioned, this isn't the NFL. Like, yeah. They want their players and their coaches and themselves to have personalities. Personalities that every human soul have their rights to. Look, Tom Siller of SB Nation actually wrote a bunch of tweets. I don't remember if it was yesterday or today, my time. But people started, in his mentions, going all, stick to sports.
Yeah.
Unfollowed. I don't want to listen to all this. Yada, yada, yada. Look, Tom Siller, first and foremost, is a goddamn human being.
Mm-hmm.
He is a sports writer secondarily.
Right.
And that's a huge problem that I have, that people are somehow telling us who write about sports or talk about sports that you can't have an opinion. You're, in my eyes, you're the guy who talks about sports. How dare you break that ideology I have of you? Well, screw you. I'm sorry. This is, Jesus, we're going to lose a lot of listeners. Well, screw you. I mean, that I'm a person. You're a person. I can see, look, we have been on webcam for when we started podcasting, Brian. I have never seen you this physically, visibly defeated. I mean, God damn it, man. You were almost goddamn crying right before, because I know how hard this is on you. I know how hard it is on many Americans. I have so many friends in the States who are in complete disbelief. And yeah, I know I'm ranting right now and I apologize, but look, I hope for the best as well. Obviously I do, but I do believe that in America there is a tendency to watch the news that you prefer,
yeah,
instead of seeking out information that is objective.
Yeah.
I'm talking about especially Fox News, right? Yes. Where the old white man is sitting there watching some report that has been, as a, you know, rigged, basically, just to use Trump word, rigged in the editing process, and going, hey, honey, look at that. Look, there's that black fella who did something wrong. I was right. Didn't I tell you that black fella? Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now. Like, seriously, this is about a media. This is about the media actually playing the biggest part in making this whole election just bad shit crazy. And this isn't even about Trump anymore. This isn't about Trump or Hillary. This is just about the grounds for how people voted. Like, so many people just said they based their entire decision on one thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I swear to God, I saw a clip, and this is ridiculous. Like, this is a guy who voted. I said, well, you know what? I couldn't really decide, so I flipped a coin, and it actually landed on Hillary, but I like Trump's hair better. Ha, ha, ha. God damn it. You shouldn't have a vote.
Yeah.
Like, and that would go the other way as well.
Right,
like,
right.
I wouldn't want a person to vote for the right choice if it didn't feel right to them.
Yeah.
Like, just because. And if you base it on something weird, no, don't. Like, take it seriously.
Yeah.
Take it seriously. Acquire information. Seek out information. Don't go to the news channel that you know will just feed you what you like. Seek it out, man.
Another thing that, like, from my perspective, that was just completely jarring. The fact that so many people wrote in a dead gorilla's name as their next president. I'm like, are you serious?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And given how close the race was in certain states and I guess overall as well, it's like, how are you doing that? Like, I'm laughing now because that's all I can really do, but I just don't understand it. And I guess to reiterate a couple of things, like, well, not necessarily to reiterate, but I guess the interesting thing now will be, all right, what's done is done. Trump has been elected president, but how the world reacts to that will be interesting. So a few politicians here in Australia have been quoted saying some pretty negative things about Trump during the campaign. So, for example, our opposition leader referred to Trump as barking mad. You've had someone who's in government now who, you know, the Liberal Party who govern Australia really. One of their ministers referred to Trump as a dropkick. So these were comments that were made during the campaign. So it'll be interesting now to see how people backpedal and what they begin to say about Trump. And obviously it has to be somewhat positive. So, you know, in order to keep these world relations humming along, hopefully positively. But, it'll just, I guess what's done is done now. It is perplexing, and we could probably harp on it for quite some time as to how it all unfolded. But hopefully just from here on out, people come to their senses, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I brought it up in the first place, aside from what the coach has said, is that, you know, it's honestly been hard for me to focus on sports since Tuesday. And it's weird for me to say because you know, I write, I podcast, I work, I'm an editor, full-time, a sports editor, and it's just been hard to focus on something that is ultimately meaningless. Like, you know, I think about a week ago, I was downtown, in downtown Chicago, celebrating with 5 million people the Cubs winning the World Series, and, like, it's great and exciting, and it rallies the whole city together, but it ultimately doesn't matter. You know, it's just sports. It has no tangible impact on someone's well-being unless you are employed by a sports team. So I think, you know, I admire NBA players for being able to continue on with their jobs. Like, it must be really hard right now. I mean, Carmelo Anthony, I saw some comments from him on ESPN, and Chris Paul talked to, I think it was Kevin Ding of Bleacher Report, about how they had to explain this to their 9-year-old and 8-year-old kids, and like how their kids are now scared. So they are playing, you know, they woke up Tuesday and played a game that night, and now they wake up Wednesday and it's like their entire world is different. So I think it's, you know, I think it's important ultimately for NBA fans to empathize with that. And realize that these guys are millionaires and they are very privileged to do what they do. But even their worldview is now different because of what happened. And it's going to be on their minds even while they're trying to escape and use sports as their escape. So, you know, Mark, you said it well. We could go on about this for hours, but we had to talk about it just because it's going to have a big effect on the NBA and everything else in this country. So on a brighter note, the Cleveland Cavaliers did make their trip to the White House on Thursday after winning the championship back in June. Obama made a 3-1 joke about the Warriors, which cemented him. We're going to build a new Mount Rushmore and just have four faces of Obama. He also made a joke about J.R. Smith wearing a shirt and how he wasn't sure if the shirt was going to make an appearance at the White House. Again, cementing his four Mount Rushmore faces, because I just cannot imagine Mr. Trump making similar jokes next year. And I will say, you know, LeBron has already spoken out and said he's not sure if he's going to go to the White House now if they win another ring. And Richard Jefferson on Snapchat said, how cool, we're the last NBA team to go to the White House. So that'll be a fascinating subplot to watch next fall. The other big storyline that came out in the past week or so was Mark Cuban versus ESPN. So I think SB Nation was the one who originally broke the story. Cuban temporarily rescinded the credentials of Mark Stein and Tim McMahon, both of whom are based in Dallas. Mark Stein's a national writer. McMahon used to be a Dallas beat writer. Now he's kind of focusing elsewhere. Cuban said that he was unhappy ESPN didn't have someone covering the Mavericks full time, said it was partly concerned that automated game reports could eventually replace human-generated content. Recently, I think within the past day or so, ESPN has resolved the dispute. They said, you know, we're not necessarily going to have a human at every game, so when we're not, we'll use the AP for the Associated Press, which is standard practice for a lot of places. If you read any recap on ESPN, it's pretty much all of the recaps themselves are AP, and then they have reaction from other writers, and that's how pretty much every major website does it. They also said they're going to now link to team sites such as Mavs.com in their game recaps. So, you know, this is another thing that's going to hit home for the three of us, because we are in the basketball profession. Did you find Cuban's argument to be credible at first? And then, do you think it's a good idea, the way ESPN resolved this dispute, to kind of say we're going to start linking to other team-based sites, which I guess for the Bulls would be Sam Smith?
Oh, no. That would be a bad decision. I might prefer a computer than Sam Smith. just quietly. it's an interesting situation. It was typical Cuban being overly brash and going to an extreme to get his point across. And I think when it first broke, the news broke, it was kind of like, what the hell is going on here? What have they done or said about the Mavericks for him to just all of a sudden ban these guys or remove their credentials? So initially when the tweet came through from SB Nation, you thought something negative may have happened with the writers doing something or something of that nature. At least that was my interpretation. Mm-hmm. But it was Cuban making a stance. And until we found out what that stance related to, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And he took, a lot of heat for what he did and probably still will for the actions he took anyway, because they were so extreme. But I don't know if the resolution is necessarily one that's sustainable. So, I mean, linking to sites and doing those sorts of things, maybe it appeases Cuban for now, but whether it does long-term, I'm not too sure. But, I think it's just Cuban being Cuban, really, just doing his thing, being extreme, and in order to raise a point and to raise a pretty valid point.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, the whole sports writing piece. As you mentioned, Stein and McMahon are Dallas guys, and I'm sure they've both got relationships with Cuban. So from his perspective, I don't think it was anything personal with those guys, but he had to make his stand. And I think it's a fair one. Maybe he's a little bit entitled, thinking that the Mavericks needed you know, this coverage, and I guess maybe every team needs that coverage, but it, with the way technology is going these days and the way sports writing is moving as well, it's not surprising that ESPN have done what they've done, and to a degree, I guess it's not super surprising that Cuban did what he did, even if it was so brash.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, Cuban was actually defending basketball journalists. You know, he was saying they should not have these automated recaps, and he was basically suggesting that, you know, if he's saying the Mavericks should have a beat writer, he's saying every team should have a beat writer, basically.
Correct.
So, and you know, if it was economically, if it made the economic sense for ESPN to do so, I'm sure they would. But you know, in that sense, I definitely support Cuban, because that he's frankly just trying to give more people jobs in basketball, which is in basketball writing, which is great. And it's, you know, it's hard enough to get a job, a full-time job covering a team in this field. So, you know, if we can stave off the robots a little bit longer, I think, you know, all the credit to Cuban for that. And even this resolution that they reached, you know, linking two team sites, you guys, you know, joked about Sam Smith, but you know, we all know Bobby Corrala, who works for Mavs.com. Like, yep. if Bobby's going to be on ESPN now, that's great. It's just more exposure for a really smart writer. And the, you know, Cooper Moorhead of Heat, Brian Seltzer of the Sixers site. Like, the most of the team sites, especially the ones that are being run by younger writers, you know, they're all great. And I would love to see their work more heavily promoted, not just on the team site, but on ESPN, if it comes down to it, you know, if CBS and Yahoo and all those other big sites start following a similar format, like, it's only going to be good for the basketball writing profession. So, Mark, I think you're right in that it was, Cuban was definitely doing his own thing and making a bigger show of it than he needed to. You know, he could have just released a statement right away and kind of diffused the tension. I think the news broke on a Friday night, I want to say, Friday or Saturday, and then he didn't speak to the AP until Monday, explaining why he was doing what he was doing. So there were a couple days where people were comparing him to Donald Trump and saying he's not giving fair access to the press and blah, 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 which was obviously not the case. You know, it turned out he's supporting free, fair press. So
yep.
it was definitely a an interesting a couple days in Mavs world while the rest of their team is hurt and nursing injuries.
Just one note here, because there is actually a rights issue that no one's talking about.
Oh.
Because in terms of linking team sites to ESPN,
mm-hmm.
the NBA.com is actually owned by Turner.
That's a good point.
So there might be a conflict there that needs resolving. So I believe the Dallas Mavericks is the only team that has like a standalone site that's just called Mavs.com. I haven't checked for a while, but it actually was Mavs.com for a while and not NBA.com/Mavericks.
Yeah.
Even though that would redirect them to there. So that might be how they get past this, because ESPN and Turner are, after all, competitors, and there would be an issue regarding those, you know, interlinking possibilities.
Yeah.
So that's something that needs to be considered.
Yeah, that's a very good
When
point.
I first heard this story, there's another angle to it that I thought about first before Cuban elaborated on what he did. So ESPN actually has a Dallas section. They have something called ESPN.com/Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And given that there's also like an ESPN Chicago and ESPN New York and whatnot, and those teams, the NBA teams on those sites have full-time writers, like for Chicago is Nick Friedel.
Yeah.
Then I actually thought that it was a question of ESPN Dallas not having a steady full-time beat writer. And then suddenly it came out about automated game recaps. I was like, oh, okay, this took a totally different turn right. than I expected. But like, I totally agree with you guys. He's actually helping the little guy here. Trying to say, you know what, don't turn everything into robots. Give him a pen, give him a computer, let them go to work. And hell, Mark, I appreciate that. That's nice. Thank you. Not that I have any shot in hell at getting on Mavs.com, but I mean, Look, just the mere notion that he's opening up to everyone is great. And to your point about Bobby Carella, sorry, great guy. Couldn't there's not anyone. There's not a Mavs guy out there who deserves it more to maybe go on ESPN a little bit more and be a voice for the Mavs. He is a tireless worker. Like you should all follow him. He's a great guy. Really, really terrific, top to bottom.
Yeah, that's a good. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, just a random thing that popped into my mind. Like, I'm like, I wonder how much of Cuban's outburst is in relation to the Warriors. So, like, before this Warriors season started, and it was similar to when the Heat first joined up as well, how the whole Heat index
Oh my
started to
God.
form, and how there's, like, there's quite a few writers now sort of jumping from where they were and then coming into the Golden State area to write for whatever platforms they are, but to focus on the team. So obviously Anthony Slater moved from his Oklahoma beat, to follow the Warriors. I'm pretty sure a few other guys did as well. So their names are escaping me as to who did it at the moment during that off season. But I wonder how much of it is born about good quality riders leaving, other incumbent teams to go focus on a team like the Warriors, who already had a ton of national coverage, where, Cuban is seeing good teams losing their beat riders to go follow a team that has already absorbed so much. So I wonder how much of it was, how much of his position was sort of born out of that as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point because like Brian Windhorst, followed the Heat. Like he used to cover the Cavs and then left. I think he was the plain dealer when he was with the Cavs, and they left to cover the Heat with ESPN. And I think Chris Haynes is another guy. He was
Yep,
the
that's
Akron
one.
Beacon Journal, and now he's with the Bay Area News Group. So yeah, that's a really good point. Maybe he's miffed about the Warriors attracting so much attention like the Heat did a couple years ago. He's just trying to make basketball journalism great again. So thanks,
He
Cubes.
just wants to. He just wants people to understand that Harrison Barnes is playing decently.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
Yeah.
That's where it is.
Harry B earning that max contract. So
What the hell? Let's get back to the basketball thing now that we're talking about Dallas. Okay, so I love the fact that Barnes is bawling his ass out right now, but here's the thing. This was still a gamble. Like he had not at any point over the last couple of years had a chance to test himself like off the dribble to a larger extent against NBA teams. He looked awful in the playoffs. He looked as though he was just he had trouble with hitting just open shots, and everything just seemed to fall apart from this guy. And when he did put the ball on the floor, he looked uncomfortable and rushed and everything. So when he signed that max deal, I mean, look, I was opposed him, for example, coming to Chicago. And I know a lot of Bulls fans had that debate, and because they said, "Oh, but he is going to be great. Of course he is." And I still to this day am going, well, you don't have any proof of that. You don't have data of him becoming great. You have nothing to really build that assumption on except raw guesswork. Like, obviously, Dallas has way more intel than we have access to. So if they somehow knew beforehand that they were getting him and letting him become like the primary scorer and whatnot, the kudos to them. But I still look at this as them getting a little bit lucky in terms of him actually succeeding the way that he is. Like 22 a game, like no one saw that.
Yeah, it's also worth noting Dirk's been out for a couple games with Achilles soreness. Deron Williams is out as well. So some of it is just by necessity. Like they just need someone to score that many points, and Wes Matthews can't hit the broadside of a barn to start the year. Volume is helping drive some of that. But yeah, Barnes is playing really well, and it's good to see. Even
Definitely.
even Warriors fans are like, "Oh, okay, that's good work, Harry B. Nice to see that."
I'm still waiting for someone to say, "Oh, we should have kept Harry and then just not let Durant come aboard." You know, someone's going to say it at some point,
There's
especially
definitely
on
a
Twitter.
hot take coming when Durant falls into a slump and Harry B's still balling out.
Should have kept Harry B, man. Come on, that KD fella. No.
All right, let's wrap things up here with our My Crush segment. Mark, we do a thing every week where we shine a spotlight on a guy who is not necessarily getting the attention he deserves. Harry B. might be
sweet.
Such an example. But Mort, I want to start with you because you've got an anti-crush, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, okay. So I'm just going to start out by saying that I do think there's a load of potential here, and it's way early in the season, but I've been kind of disappointed with Alan Crabb. Like, he got $75 million, and he's getting the minutes. He's getting 30 minutes a game, and he's sitting at 9.6 points. He's not become this third weapon that we talked about in our season preview of the Blazers. And there's a sense of me that believes he's either being underutilized or that he just doesn't offer a whole lot more than scoring when he is on. His playmaking has gone up a little bit, and it seems like he does have some potential to build that area of his game. But he's not like a standout defender. He's not strong on the glass. He doesn't really offer a whole lot. And when you pay that kind of money, you do need that little extra bit of production. Because I'm worried when I see both him and Evan Turner not produce a whole lot, and they're getting paid $145 million over the next 4 years. That is a lot of money that you could have spent theoretically elsewhere to get some production, especially like for a big man. I mean, hell, they need a big who can do a little bit more. Like, no disrespect to Miles Plumlee no, that's not Miles.
Mason.
Miles?
Mason.
Yeah, Mason, yeah. Right? Oh, God. All the Plumlee boys, yeah. Man. Jesus.
Too many.
And he's actually doing pretty great, like averaging 4 assists a game, and he's becoming like a playmaker and everything. But look, they needed something else, and for them to justify signing Crabb and Turner to those deals and foregoing a big man, essentially, then those guys need to show up. Like, Turner, I don't have any hopes for. It was a bad signing from day one. But Crabb definitely thought he would contribute a little bit more. But again, it's early, 10 games in for him. The ship has not left the harbor yet. The fat lady hasn't sung yet. So, but still, slightly concerned.
Yeah.
Slightly concerned.
That's fair. And to be fair to Portland, they did sign Festus Ezeli, but he had a setback recently with his knee, so we don't know if or when he will be making his return. Feels very Andrew Bynum-esque at the moment. Yeah. Sorry to bring those memories up, Philly fans. Just keep Ezeli away from any bowling alleys. Mark, how about you? Who would you like to shine a spotlight on this week?
So forgive me if this has been mentioned before, but I guess my crush at the moment, aside from my constant crush for Chris Paul, would be Dwight Howard, actually.
Nice. That's a good one.
So I guess Dwight is one of those guys that is a victim of his perception. He obviously had a poor stop in LA and a pretty average run there in Houston, particularly last season with how things played out. And I think he was vilified. He was made the scapegoat. And, you know, who knows how much he was to blame for what happened in Houston last season. But in terms of what's happening at the moment, he's been really good for the Hawks. And the Hawks haven't really lost a step with the transition from Horford to Howard. And if anything, they look like a more rounded and complete team, particularly defensively. Just to think about the Hawks last season, they were one of the worst rebounding teams in the league last season. In terms of rebounding percentage, they were 28th last season. Mm-hmm. Now, again, we're early in the season, but they're second in rebounding percentage. In terms of offensive rebounding percentage, they were last in the league last season. They're now, I want to say, third off the top of my head. Right. So,
yeah.
I mean, whether you want to credit all of that to Dwight Howard or not, you can, you know, there's obviously other players on the court that are helping out in those areas, but He clearly has affected their rebounding to the point where they're now actually one of the league's best rebounding teams, and their defense hasn't fallen off at all. So they're second last season in defensive rating, and they're second in defensive rating again. So they haven't lost a step in defense. They've become better rebounding team. Sure, they lose Horford's mid-range ability, which, you know, is something that they used a lot in the pick and pop last season. But Dwight has been really, really good, and it just by chance, the Celtics are now one of the worst rebounding teams in the NBA. And I'm not going to blame that all on Al Horford, because that the Celtics weren't a great rebounding team last season either. But I'm just happy for Dwight, because he was a guy that had a lot of negative perceptions out there. And I'm just happy that he's playing well, contributing, and has really turned that franchise around markedly in something they really needed.
Yeah, for sure. And to be fair to Boston, Horford's been out for like a week and a half now with a concussion, so the rebounding thing is not all their fault. I think I might have been the highest on Howard coming into the season out of the three of us between Morton, Sarah, and I. But we all, in our division preview for the Southeast, we mentioned that's like, we were not sold that his decline in LA and Houston meant he was done being an elite, option. It was just, he was in some bad situations and Houston just refused to use him in the last year. But yeah, it's awesome to see him thrive, because let's be real, the NBA is just better when you have more elite talent, and Dwight Howard, despite getting up there in age, still has that potential. So mine this week, aside from Mr. Van Gundy, Mr. Kerr, and Mr. Popovich for their courage in expressing their thoughts over the past few days, if we're going to focus on someone on the court, it's got to be my boy Otto Porter. Coming out of Georgetown, I couldn't have foreseen him having a game where he has 34 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks, 3 steals, and 3 threes, which he did against Boston in a 118-93 win. He did something similar against Syracuse one year, where he just picked apart their 2-3 zone by standing at the foul line and raining jumpers on their head all day. But he's definitely more of that glue guy, where his line against Cleveland on Friday was 11 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 block, 1 3. That's more what I thought you would get out of Otto, just filling in gaps. He's not going to be your primary scorer. But this year, he has really made some strides. And, he's shooting almost 60% from the field. That's going to regress. It's just a small sample size. But with Bradley Beal, he already strained the hamstring. You just don't know. You can't count on him necessarily being available all the time. And Otto's really stepping up as this reliable sidekick to John Wall. So I think, if there's already talk about, speculation about how long can John Wall be in Washington, Otto is going to be the guy who could help keep him there, I would think. So I'm going to, shout out to my boy Otto. You're doing Georgetown proud. Keep it up, buddy.
Shout out to Tony Snell back in the day, making Otto look like a damn fool, by the way, since we now have the Georgetown and then the Bulls connection here. That was funny, though. Great on Otto, but that play, that's 2 seasons old something, but that was just
terrific.
He just lost him completely.
That was bad. That was a Shaqton moment to remember. So that's going to do it for us here at the NBA podcast. Special thanks again to Mark Karanzoulis for joining us. Mark, again, just give readers or listeners a reminder of where they can find you.
So they can hear my voice on the Dennis Podman podcast with Borton, where we talk all things Chicago Bulls. You can follow me on Twitter. Again, I won't read out my handle because of my last long name, but I'm sure you can find it if you so wish. And you can follow my writing at Chicago Bulls Confidential.
Nice. All right. Yeah, we will definitely include your Twitter handle along with the posts, so people can find it there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. Check out FanRag Sports, which is where our pod is being hosted this year. Check us out on iTunes as well. Please subscribe, download, leave us some reviews. We'd love to read any feedback. Until then, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined by Mark and Morton Jensen. And thanks for joining me today, guys.
Take care, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
You too.